too long.
That's not true.
It's been a year, in fact, since you were last on the show. A whole year.
It's gone past a year. I think you were on the show like September of last year.
Oh dear.
Yes.
Too long.
Too long indeed.
But a lot of people haven't seen each other.
Yes. Yes, that's very true, actually. I feel like in my head I'm thinking to myself, oh yeah, that's gone really quick. But then I think about all that's happened in the last year and maybe it's not gone quick enough. I'm actually looking forward to putting this year behind me. That's how I feel towards the end of this year. Not in like a running away sort of thing, just I always see a year for me as like a new chapter in my life. So I'm excited for the next chapter.
Yeah.
I've learned a lot from this chapter, but 2022.
Yeah, that's where it's at.
Yes.
I feel like we said that in 2020 though.
Yes. And then COVID hit. Well, we got off to a great start in 2020, didn't we? We went Amsterdam, Lawrence.
And, yeah, we did.
Yeah, didn't do any drugs.
Anyway.
forget it. Alex.
Sorry,
yes. Yes, so Alex, it's been a year. Last time, actually, I introduced you. I think you should introduce yourself this time.
Yes.
To those of you who didn't watch the last episode, Alex in. If you didn't, watch it.
Oh, God. Yeah, well, I'm Alex.
Woo!
You do a lot more than being just Alex, though, don't we? And you've done a lot more this year since we last spoke as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm a herbalist. It's one of the things I do. And I have this really interesting, for me at least, take on medicine in which you look at the integrated human being, the human being as a whole, so you don't split the psychology from the physical ailment. So you understand that if you have been under certain types of psychological pressures or emotional pressures, that as a result of that, physical things are going to happen.
Yeah.
And so when you treat someone, you can't just treat a physical ailment. You have to treat a whole pattern.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's my part. That's how I treat.
Yeah.
And I also write books on some aspects of psychology.
Right.
Especially on personality types and so on, things like that. That's what I do professionally.
Yeah.
And I'm always trying to push that way of understanding things forward.
Yeah.
I found that there's this whole thing of systems thinking or network, which has come out of something called network medicine, which really looks at the relationships between things. So like the relationship, let's say you went out last night and you got into a fight.
Yeah.
You'll notice that after the fight, if you get into fights at night,
yeah, no, I don't. I've never been in a fight at night that I could remember that.
But you know, what happens? You start to shake.
Were you with us last night?
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah.
One of the things is afterwards you start to, you'll have a
adrenaline.
Which you shake,
Yeah.
Which you'll notice that also a pattern right across the animal world. So this stressful situation, which then had a fight response, is then followed by some patterns of the body unwinding that out. What will happen is that happened because there were changes going on inside of your body. There were things that your body did to cope with that situation.
Right.
Now, sometimes those kinds of reactions get stuck in the body.
Yeah.
And when they get stuck in the body, the body was not designed to work in that way permanently.
Yeah.
But that's become its new norm. So there are many patterns of illness which are syndromes which come out of that kind of stress. So one of my specialities is treating in order to remove those things that have taken seat.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you find a lot of inflammatory conditions, for instance, are related to people who've been in situations in which they've had strong freeze responses. So, like, because the freeze response is a response in which you try to you try to play dead, or you try to pretend to be not threatening.
Yeah,
as for safety. So one of the things that happens when you do that is that your brain secretes natural opioids, right? These are painkillers.
Yeah.
And so you become quite detached.
Yeah.
Right? And abstracted. So these things are never meant to be fixed permanent states. These are states that you pass in, so you get stuck and then you get illnesses. So a lot of inflammatory conditions come out of people in that situation of having felt trapped for a long time.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's one of my specialities. And then also I've been working at a range of tonics, and this is one of them.
Ooh.
Which is called the Vitalizing Bitter.
Look at that. Right. Beautiful bottle.
Yes. Ooh, yes. Alex, put it closer to the camera so people right in the camera lens.
Right there.
There we go.
There we go. Beautiful. Vitalizing Bitters. Yes. Would you want to yes. Yeah. Has it got a little description?
Yeah, it's got a description. Maybe I should read it if I
can.
Not even read the thing. Vitalizing Bitters is a vitalizing tonic for adults. It sharpens the mind, tones the liver and digestion, strengthens and stimulates circulation, strengthens libido, increases stamina, builds immunity, and brightens the skin. This is a strongly adaptogenic bitter tonic crafted by medical herbalist Alex Carberry, BSc, with the wisdom and herbs of four great herbal medicinal traditions of Western herbalism, Yunani Tib, Amazonian medicine, and Chinese medicine. So I grew up in the Amazon.
Yes.
And as a result of that, I inherited part of that medicinal tradition.
Yeah.
But also as a herbalist, I studied others. And so I studied Western herbalism.
Yeah.
And then there's also a Yunani, what's this called, Yunani medicine, which is really, because it means, Yunani means Ionian, which is like Greek medicine.
Yeah.
But that's the one that survived amongst the Arabs.
Really?
And then what's the Muslim? So it comes from the same tradition. This is the medicine of Hippocrates.
Yeah.
Right? It was Greek medicine, and it's based on the four humors and so on.
Oh, man.
Okay, and so I studied that, and I've also studied Chinese medicine. So this tonic brings them together.
Wow.
Now, this is one of those
Superman
things.
Tonic.
This is one of those things that you read the label of in the shop and you think,
yeah,
that's not going to do that.
Yeah.
But it does.
Yeah. So you've tried this, so Lawrence.
I was on this for about, I don't think the last time I stopped, I was probably about 3 solid months. Mm-hmm. I think I had 3 bottles, mm-hmm. which lasted me about roughly a month.
Mm-hmm.
I'd probably say just under 3 months.
Yeah.
Wasn't it for?
And what was your...
All those things.
What you experienced, but what was your reasoning for trying them? Like, did you have a specific...
Alex being next door is probably the main one.
Yeah.
I wouldn't typically go and look for these things on the shelves.
Yeah.
Because, like I say, I've probably tried them before and they've not really done what exactly they said they were on the tin. But, I was very shocked. and I ended up having to actually have a smaller dosage because it was
having because of how effective it was.
Effects, yeah.
Oh,
especially on the libido side.
Yeah. So I. Which is a guys, story we're going to take a short break, right? No.
Sorry, not that. I mean, I discovered that it strengthens the libido by listening to other people.
Yeah.
that wasn't your main try. Yeah.
Guys, I've actually never tried it before. I used to walk into the office and see Lawrence like get this like weird looking drink out of the fridge and then like drink it and then start dancing and think, what's he drinking over there? But now I'll know. So bottoms up, guys. Oh my God. That is
when
crazy.
He does a backflip.
That is crazy. Oh my God, I'm going to turn into the Incredible. Alex, I don't even know how to describe that taste.
It is exactly.
Oh my God.
It tastes exactly what it's called, isn't it? Vitalizing Bitters. It's like bitter, but it's like.
Oh, that's fantastic. Alex, when creating something like this, though, like when... I'm intrigued about the test part of it. So, like, when you're testing it out and you're doing samples, et cetera, when in your mind did you know, I've got it, basically? Because it must take a while to basically, you know, show all the effects of develop. This drink, you know? Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Mm. Well, it's... Okay, I've been dealing with herbs for so long.
Yeah.
That when I start to think of something...
Yeah.
I run it in the back of my mind almost like a mind experiment. I wanted to do this. And so usually when I start with the tonic, the first in three versions, I'm usually there.
Yeah.
But I've been doing it for a long time, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when I was taken to Guyana when I was three. I was born in England.
Yeah.
And my grandmother used to deposit me with this old herbalist, and we just, I'd spend my mornings with her.
Yeah.
So I've been dealing with herbs since I was like, below the knee.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So there's a thing about understanding. Okay, because there's a way of. I was taught to, by tasting a herb, I know what it does. I don't need to know the name of the herb.
All right.
I just put it in my tongue and I know what it does.
Yeah.
And so it's a very energetic way of, and this is how we tradition. This is how we deal with herbs in that tradition. So, because the Amazon's vast. So where we are, you cross a range of mountains and then you're in another huge part of it. So you know your herbs. You put a little bit on your tongue.
Yeah, right?
You know how to recognize who's poisonous.
Mm.
You know to stay away from those.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, because obviously there's so many different types. You must have had surely so many scenarios where even if you're putting something on the tip of your tongue, it had a bad reaction.
No, well, they speak. I mean, sorry, when I say they speak, I mean plants have a language.
Mm. Yeah. Right?
And maybe I could take a step back. You see, in many of the American Indian languages in that region, there actually isn't a word for plants as a separate, right?
Right.
Right. In fact, the reason why they have totems is that there are relationships in the universe. And so you'll find that the different patterns that things, or the different appearances that things have, their underlying patterns are the same, and those are the patterns of kinship.
Yeah.
Right? So you get animal totems and plant totems, but they're all representing the same energetic pattern, sometimes being expressed in the animal world, amongst men, in minerals, etc. So what you get is an approach to medicine which is very energetic, right? So you taste, you see, because the plants have patterns.
Yeah.
When you see bright colors and especially like
dots,
purples and dots and so on, you immediately pay attention.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. Bright reds, you immediately pay attention.
Yeah.
And then there's certain, so you know who you can check.
You get.
And there's certain families. So you get plant, any time, the moment is you see a plant that, they call them umbellifers, right, in Western botany. So these are plants that they come out like umbrellas like that.
Right.
Right. That family, loads of poisonous members.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay.
Is that because of there's so many imbalances in the actual build of the plant that it's imbalanced in color?
No, because what you find is that is the plant's protective strategy. Because plants don't move.
Right.
right? So they have a protective strategy.
Right.
So you get some plants that will have those colors, but they're not actually poisonous, right?
Right, okay.
Because that's their protective strategy from animals.
Right.
So you get the cut, and there's certain minerals which they'll use to make compounds.
Yeah.
Which are poisonous. Right? And it's gradations of poisonous in plants. I mean, because you get things like grains, which are from grasses. Mm. And what they will tend to do is that in the hulls, they will have things called lectins. And lectins are an irritant.
Right.
Because if the plant is to survive, it can't encourage too many animals to eat it.
Yeah.
So because it's a grain and the seeds are nice, then you eat too much and you get an irritation. So we've had to breed those things out of those plants, right?
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is that the plants have these protective strategies. And so one of the things as you're moving around, you learn to recognize different types.
Yeah.
And I remember that once I was traveling, I think in Ireland, and I actually poisoned myself.
Oh.
Was that too much Guinness? Or?
Yeah, no. Alex, what really happened in Ireland? Yeah. Tell the truth, Alex. Poisoned. Yeah, Alex, we've all been to Ireland and got drunk. I've actually never been, but we've all done it. What happened, no, Alex?
I was camping out, and I saw this plant. I thought it was another one.
Mm.
And I ate it. And then when I took the first mouthful,
very simple.
Uh-oh. So then I was a little far away from other people, etc. So I had to, what I had to do at that point is really sit down. I realized it was poisonous, but it wasn't too poisonous,
right?
And so I had to, what I had to do with that, it was I just really had to slow my metabolism down and just meditate for a few days.
So what plant was it?
Better you don't know.
It's funny you should say that.
Because I had a salad the other day and it was funky.
Caesar salad, you sound. Yeah. You sound.
But the point is that, you know, you learn in those traditional systems, you learn to recognize plants that you can use, to recognize the ones that you can't, and how to protect yourself, how to deal with that, right? So if you can't find anything, then you slow your metabolism right down, and you stay like that for a few days.
And do different herbs, if one has one reaction and one has the other, putting those both, say, for example, one of them brightens the skin, the other one, you know, helps the liver, putting them together, will that still do both, or will they have a different reaction? Or how do you know how much to balance?
Well, you know, sometimes you'll, let's say, for instance, you know, aloes, which is very popular. Aloe vera.
Yes.
So aloe vera has some compounds in it that will cause diarrhea. Right, so they clear the bowels. And I forget what their names are. Yeah, anthraquinone glycosides. They'll cause griping. Mm-hmm. So you have to combine them with something that warms and stimulates the digestion. So things like fennel or mints or, you know, general spices you add at the same time. Yeah, or ginger, but that you need something that really will stimulate digestion.
Yeah.
Right? And you use that to stop the griping. If you don't, then you gripe. Then when you've got a herb which will, you know, the bitter herbs, you tend, okay, so you have to turn around and go, okay, well, will this herb really slow down the digestion, because they herbs work, they affect, one of the ways that herbs work is that they either speed up or they slow down metabolism. So you, depending on the effect you want, you will then mix them for that to do what it does. So like this one here It's bitter. It's circulating. It stimulates the digestion. It really stimulates the circulation. And it makes you feel quite open. Okay. So then you're gonna use herbs like mints, etc., to really give the sense of being open.
Yeah.
And so on. So it's an art of mixing.
Yeah.
That happens over time. And they're basic rules. So there's a point at which you learn the rules and then you really experiment and play.
Yeah.
That's really interesting because I think a lot of people might instantly look at herbalism and think you have a certain tea or a certain herb that you put in your tea and you just have it with hot water and that one herb does one thing, but it's not. It's a lot more methodical than that, isn't it?
Well, that's what you hear. Obviously, a lot of people do these, like, I'm sure you've heard of them, Alex, these just herbal tea diets, you know, and people always say, I think a lot of people use them actually to, like, lose weight, I think. They think that, you know, having one, or I've heard even in some extreme cases, people replace meals. You know, I think there's a diet where it's like you just have two herbal teas and like one meal a day. Mm-hmm. And that's like a 6-week program. And I feel like it's a very
drastic approach.
It's a very drastic approach and very dangerous when you don't know what you're doing. You know, I've never really played around or done any research into herbs at all, really, apart from when we first had you on the podcast. That was the first time I'd ever, you know, had a detailed conversation about it. So it is scary to think how many people have been trying or following a diet that they know absolutely zero about.
That's just one side of it. The other side is actually knowing how you would react to that, knowing your personality well enough to actually get the right
thing. I had this situation the other day. Somebody said, okay, my son is on antidepressants. Can you recommend anything that could replace them?
Right.
So I said, wait a minute. Hold on. There's a whole diagnosis here that you've got.
Yeah. Right?
So why is your son on antidepressants?
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah.
And because when you treat, you've basically, to treat a condition, you have to model what happened.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're treating your understanding of what happened. And in a sense, it's an experiment. So you treat it, you go, okay, so that changed that.
Yeah.
What else happened?
Yeah.
Okay. People have this idea about medicine in which it's almost like you can get a magic bullet. Yeah. You get this herb and it does that.
Buy a magic pill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's really problematic.
Yeah.
Because many people will suffer from the same condition
for
very different reasons. Some may suffer the condition because of emotional matters. Some may just lifestyle issues, etc. So what you have to do is you really have to understand how they got where they are.
Yeah.
And then you're intervening to help them to get to another place. So it's not like you're treating a symptom.
Yeah.
You're treating a person to help them to get to a place that they do not have to be ill.
Yeah.
Okay? And, I mean, I've had people come to me and go, well, they want medicine. I said, no, go sleep. Mm-hmm. What? I said, no, go sleep. If you have problems sleeping, then call me. I'll send you something to help you. And they sleep early for a week. And
half the symptom
disappears.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That isn't very good business, though.
Yeah.
Okay. that's another thing as well, is that mindset where you just said there's people think they can just go and physically buy a pill or go to the GP and get a pill. It's half the battle of changing that mindset, because there's so many pharmacists and so many GPs recommending this strategy that will get them to buy more.
And that's good business, right? Because basically what...
It's a retainer.
Yeah.
Of course.
I mean, in certain conditions, like HRT, right? Hormone replacement therapies. It's when you look at the amount of markets that they have opened up for HRT, right? Which was so originally they processed horses pee to get estrogen, extracted estrogen. Then they figured out how to make estrogen artificially, because you can't patent a natural compound.
Yeah.
Right? A naturally occurring compound like that. So they had to change
it. So you need a lot of horses.
You need a lot of horses' piss.
Yeah. Which doesn't, it does not grow on trees. Yes, you cannot buy horse piss from the shop.
Well, you probably do.
Well, that's what not in Berlin.
No, what I meant is that, that when they were selling the first pills, the contraceptive pills,
yeah,
they were extracted from horse piss, right?
It
was a horse piss extract.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What, Viagra?
No. The contraceptive pills.
The contraceptive
pills were
really,
which is HRT, right? Hormone replacement therapy, right?
Oh,
so the TV was
we good?
Yeah. So the issue you have here is that once you've got it, now you're looking for markets for the product.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay. So you start finding them. So when they started, it was a contraceptive pill. Then they went, estrogen. This is what keeps women young.
Oh.
Right? Then they found that too much estrogen encouraged things like breast cancer.
Yeah.
So they had to step back from that. So they keep... So, but once HRT developed, then you kept looking for markets from them for it, right? And then you keep supporting research for that.
Yeah.
Right? And one of the latest markets that you have for HRT are people who are having gender reassignment therapies. They need hormones for the rest of their lives.
Right.
So what we have is an industry that finds markets for its product.
Yeah.
And sometimes that is the antithesis of medicine.
Yeah.
Right? Because although you... So because... It then, what you end up doing is you start to view conditions through the lens of the medicine.
Right.
Right, or the lens of the product.
Yeah.
Right. And then, you know, if you, they say, what do you say, if all you have is an axe, then everything looks like a tree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, not 100%. Yeah.
And so this is part of the problem. So one of the things I try to do is give people and grasp of, you know, okay, well, how did you get ill? How do you become ill? And how do you recognize when you're becoming ill? And what do you have to do to be well?
Yeah.
Right? So this involves that the person must change. So the person who came to me is the one that sustains a lifestyle that allows that condition to have a seed.
Yeah.
So what you're working with them to do is to move them to a point that they are no longer the person that condition has a seed in.
Yeah.
Right. And then they have, well, it's life. So then you have new problems.
Yeah.
Now you solve one problem. That's the nature of life. So you'll find new ones. Yeah.
Isn't it scary though that people would rather be prescribed a tablet or some kind of drug instead of look into their own life and make personal changes? So I saw a quote online that said, yes, mental health is real, but if you aren't eating the right food, getting enough rest, exercising, drinking enough water, taking vitamins, then you're also going to feel crap from not doing any of that stuff either. And it's like people would rather go to the doctors and say, give me this pill to feel better, instead of just making simple lifestyle choices that are 100% going to improve how they feel physically and mentally. And I think over the years, as someone that got to a point where I was struggling really, really bad with my mental health, and I was always someone that said, I'm never ever going on antidepressants. I don't want a tablet to tell me when I'm happy and et cetera, et cetera. So I actually ended up getting better from exercising, from self-love, from seeing my friends, from going to bed, from not eating late, from not consuming as much alcohol as I was doing. And I realized that if you don't actually put yourself in a good position to take care of yourself, how are you ever mentally going to be in a good place? Whether it's depression or whether it's just you have days where you feel off. And I've realized now that the days where I feel bad is because I've ate rubbish food, or I've had alcohol, or because I've had a lack of sleep, you know, or things that I'm in control of. And on the days where I feel like I've got most energy, it's because I'm doing all the basics right. And I just feel like, yeah, a lot of people, maybe, I don't know if they've been misinformed as they've been growing up, but I just think they're not in touch with, I don't know, with the importance of just looking after yourself. I know that sounds so simple, but I feel like a lot of people just don't know how to take care of themselves, which is really strange because all the information's there for you, but a lot of people just simply don't want to do it. It's really bizarre to me. Never really understood that. So it's like people that constantly put their bodies through, I don't know, like torture, know that what they're doing and the stuff they're doing to the body, it shouldn't be happening no more. But it's like, instead of I'm going to stop doing this to myself, it's, oh, I'm going to take this drug that just gives me an immediate reaction, and then that will allow me to carry on doing stuff that isn't good for me.
And if you really look at it, often we are not educated in a manner that allows us to see the connection between our actions and some of the health consequences. No. Okay? Because if you see something that widespread,
yeah,
then know that there are things that we are doing that's manufacturing that. So this is quite widespread.
Yeah.
If it was in the interest of our educational process,
yeah,
that should have been dealt with, it would have been. I mean, and I give you an example. In Finland, they had some of the highest levels of cardiovascular disease.
Right.
Right. So heart disease,
yeah,
et cetera.
Yeah.
Strokes.
Yeah.
And it was a strain on their health system.
Yeah.
So they decided to address it. The way that they addressed it is, they said, okay, well, forget the old ones. They started addressing it with the children.
Right.
Now, Finland has lowest levels of cardiovascular disease in the
world.
What
was the reason originally?
Diet.
Red meat.
Well, I think it's a lot more than red meat.
Fats.
It's diet. Okay.
Yeah, I don't really know what finished foods are.
Let's step back.
I want to say whale blubber or something like that. I don't, that's probably not right.
No, it was meat. It was. Okay, let's step back. Basically, there are certain diseases that are associated with Western lifestyles. And Western lifestyles have diet, you know, there's how you work, etc. So you get diet, stress.
Yeah.
Yeah. brightening the night so that we tend to sleep later, etc. So in that lifestyle, we think that a lot of meat is a sign of prosperity. You'll find that in any traditional society, and I grew up, I used to keep my own animals. If you're depending on your own animals, you certainly cannot eat meat every day.
Yeah.
Right? Unless you have herds of thousands.
Yeah.
So that was one problem that we have. So we felt that animal protein was a sign of health. And so we eat a lot of animal protein. And then because it generally takes about 3 to 5 years, let's say for a normal cow to grow and become ready for slaughter, that didn't make good business sense. So first they got it down to so they studied ways of getting of reducing the time. So they got it down to 3 years.
Right.
Then they got it down to 2. Then they got it down to 18 months. As they did that, they got a thing they call marbling. So if you look at the meat, they say, okay, well, tasty meat has marbling. Marbling happened because the cows were not as active. And so they had much higher fat content.
Mm. That's why Wagyu is so good.
Yeah. I wouldn't know. I don't eat red meat anymore, Lawrence. Yeah. I wouldn't know.
So when they told me about this Wagyu meat from Japan, and I looked into it, I went, well, good luck. I mean, I'm not eating that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and you know, like where I come from, the savannas are about 800 miles away from the coast. So you'd have to, it took 2 weeks to bring the cows from the savannas to the coast before you got your meat. So by the time the meat got there, it was quite lean.
Mm.
Okay. And actually quite tasty.
Mm.
But in a very different way. So what happened is that in order to take meat to market, it changed the way that they reared it, right? In fact, in order to get it down to 18 and 12 months, you have to make sure that that animal doesn't get sick. You have to make sure that the animal doesn't move too much, right? Or you lose the fat content, etc. So it's almost like you're no longer eating a natural cow.
Yeah.
Okay? And because in the past you couldn't produce meat that cheaply,
yeah,
and in those quantities, people ate a lot less of it. I mean, and you look at, I don't know if you've ever planted plants and vegetables in your garden, right? Because in Burton, I used to be self-sufficient in vegetables.
Yeah.
Okay? Even in the winter, right? Because they're vegetables that you will get in the winter.
Mm.
So you, instead of that, so you stop people from planting. So people are encouraged to plant. They go to work. And they start eating all of that meat. And then they start shifting their diets into diets that people... Okay, sorry, there's more. So when you're tired,
yeah,
you tend to reach for carbohydrates.
Yeah.
If you're emotionally stressed, you tend to reach for things that have a sweet taste. You know, even the baby in the womb, if the mother has sweet things, it drinks more amniotic fluid, right? So the fluid in the womb, it drinks more of it because you have a connection to the sweet taste.
Yeah.
But the sweet taste also soothes. So in societies where we're stressed,
yeah,
emotionally separated from each other, meat is cheap. The range of vegetables that we would traditionally have, we no longer have. I mean, you go into the supermarket, and I don't know if you had gone into a traditional greengrocer's. Well, the last time I really saw that was the early 90s.
Mm. Yeah.
Where, you know, you'd have seasonal vegetables, right? And there were some vegetables, there were some things you'd only get for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Right? All that's gone.
Yeah.
So what we've ended up with is with the shaping of taste that is skewed in the direction of things that are sweet, carbohydrate-rich, meat, and vegetables that are fairly bland.
Yeah.
Yeah. Without the range of experimentation that people would traditionally have. And as a result of that, we are ill.
Mm.
Yeah. We're stressed. If you're stressed, you're going to... And fried foods
eat poorly.
Really make you... fried foods are also soothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in order to address that, you can't just say, okay, well, I've got a healthy diet. That doesn't really mean anything. You've got to address an entire context.
Mm.
Right? And if you're having diets like that, which are meat heavy, vegetable poor, carbohydrate rich, then you're going to have problems with, because every food group is in vegetables, right? In the vegetable, it's got proteins, It's got carbs. It's got vitamins. It's got minerals. The colors of the vegetables will reflect the different minerals that are there. And so when you are on these carbohydrate and meat primarily diets, then they are poor in vitamins.
Yeah.
And in minerals.
Yeah.
Which is why they add things like thiamine and vitamin B, etc., to flour. Right? So we end up with actually nutrient poor diets.
Yeah.
And diseases that are related to that.
That's a lot to think about. I think I've, Lawrence, as you know, I've had so many discussions with you over the past couple of years about just my personal diet and just the changes I've made. Like I mentioned a second ago, I don't eat red meat anymore. I gave that up about 12 months ago. Mm-hmm. And I basically just realized that I was consuming it probably minimum. I was having it 3 times a week. Mm-hmm. And it was giving me chest pains. Mm-hmm. It's giving me chest pains. And my mum used to always say to me, Jacob, don't have red meat and then go straight to sleep because it's going to lay on your chest and et cetera, et cetera. She always used to say it to me. I used to just think, I don't know, when you're young, you think, oh, whatever, you know, I'll get on with it.
Also, mum, when you're making that good.
Yeah, you know, mum, it's your fault. It's your fault I've got chest pains, mum. Don't make curried mutton and then we'll be fine. So I was like, oh, whatever, I can do it. Well, yeah, I think it just got to a point at the start, well, sort of this time last year, where I was just like, I'm going to give it up. You know, I'm consuming a lot of meat. You know, I still eat chicken. I still eat fish, pork, etc. You know, there's a lot of other meats out there. So I just thought, you know, could I do it? Could I give up this food group that I've been eating for all of my life? And 12 months on, I can honestly say, Lawrence, I've said to you, I don't even think about eating it anymore. And I never thought I would get to a point where I could give up my favorite meat and give up my favorite food, which is curried mutton, and be so okay with it. And I think it was me realizing, and again, this comes back to what I was saying earlier on about self-love, that when you get used to eating stuff that doesn't make you feel good, it's very simple to just
ignore the negatives.
To just, you know, it was like, yeah, I still 100% think red meat's the tastiest meat. I still believe that. But just knowing the effect it had on me and knowing that I'm never going to feel that feeling and knowing that for the past 12 months, I've not had any chest pains it was such a realization to me. And then I started to think about the amount of people out there are maybe struggling with pains in their arm or chest or whatever. And it's all just being related to the food they're eating. And instead of looking into, you know, just giving it one thing like I've done, is giving it one food group, again, they'd rather go to a doctor and, you know, what drugs can you give me to curve this or help that? And it's just such a realization of how much am I actually taking care of myself and my body, and do I care about what I'm putting in my system?
Another big one, salt, isn't it? I was going to say another big one, salt.
Well, Hippocrates, who is the father of what would become Greek medicine that survived into our time, he said, let your food be your medicine.
Yeah.
Every traditional medicinal system uses your food as medicine. Now, what I find really fascinating about the modern situation is that the thing about it is that with modern nutrition, with the birth of modern nutrition and the birth of modern diseases, right, we haven't been able to deal with it. You know, we're still battling with cancer. We're still battling with the rates of cardiovascular disease. We're still battling with the diabetes. But there are previous societies or previous medicines that actually dealt with that.
Yeah.
So for me, the study of diet was a big part of medicine.
Yeah.
So the first, there's some basic rules. And these are the really fundamental rules. Is that when you're eating food, make sure that there are at least three colors of vegetables in your food.
Yeah.
Make sure that there are more vegetables in them than bulk, things like carbohydrates.
Yeah.
Right? You eat less and you feel fuller.
Yeah.
Make sure that, you know, it's like we will have a steak or a pot of let's say curried mutton, which is meat.
Yeah.
That is what people ate on celebrations.
Yeah.
They didn't eat. So our diseases are because of our wealth.
Yeah.
Okay?
No.
As a society, because of our relative wealth.
Yeah. Yeah.
So traditionally, you would just cut your meat up into really small pieces.
Yeah.
And it would be there almost like a garnish to add taste.
Yeah.
Right? So once you get to the point that we're eating meat like that,
yeah,
it wasn't meant to be ate like that day in, day out, week in, week out.
Yes, 100%. Okay?
So, you know, you've given up red meat and you've seen the benefits of that.
Yes.
Okay? But our diets are so skewed. Okay? The other thing that was part of a natural diet are periods where you don't really eat.
Yeah.
They call it fasting.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Now people fast to purify themselves, as they call it, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, because fasting gives you discipline. It allows the body to clear itself.
Yeah.
But it's like the Romans ate two meals a day maximum.
Yeah.
They felt it was extreme extravagance to eat more than two.
Yeah.
I remember reading this text by a man called, they call him Imam Ghazali, who was like maybe 600-700 years ago.
Yeah.
And now he's talking about eating. He says, okay, yeah. He says, well, most people eat maybe once a day. I went, what? Most people eat more than once a day? What are you talking about? And then he says, well, you know, two times a day, but more than that is extravagance, which was like the Roman position. Then he said, and there's some people who eat every other day. And then there's some people who eat once every 3 days.
Yeah.
And there's some people who eat once a week.
Yeah.
And at that point, my old brain was frying.
Yeah.
Okay? Because we've grown up with plenty.
Yeah.
So you're talking about whole civilizations that were kind of like world conquering, etc.
Yeah.
And people didn't eat every day.
Yeah.
Okay? And that was not only because they did not have, but because that was their habit.
Mm. Yeah.
So we are a culture that has three meals a day.
And that's a minimum. Yeah. That's not even max for some people. That's if I don't have breakfast, lunch, and as someone that doesn't have three meals a day, I've always said I'm not a breakfast person. I'm never hungry in the morning. That it frightens me. Do you know what I mean? So when I hear people that are having three meals a day, they're snacking in between meals and having pudding, supper. What? I'm thinking, I don't think you're not at anymore.
Why are you pointing at that?
There's Michael Jordan I was pointing at. No.
I only have two meals a day. I barely have one sometimes.
Yeah, no, I'm joking. That was harsh of me, but I needed to pick on someone. You were the easy target. No, but no, guys, I could have this conversation forever, but I think we have.
Yeah, we're about to run out.
Run out of time.
Alex, your Vitalizing Bitters. Where can the people get it?
Yes.
Oh. Actually, if you go onto Instagram.
Yes.
And you go to Carberry Botanicals.
Yes.
You'll find a link to this.
All the links are on there.
All the links are on there.
Well, we're going to put the links in the description so you guys can do that. I'm going to trial out a bottle because that was the most insane thing I've ever put in my mouth. And yes.
And I've got a QR code.
And a QR code to go with it. Yes. So we will put that in the description, guys. And
yeah, it's just a pleasure as always, Alex. I can't thank you enough. Yes. Short notice, I know, but and I'm sorry to cut you short, guys. But you know, we know your time's precious, especially at this time of year.
Yes.
And I hope you have you on.
Well, I hope you're going to wish them a Merry Christmas.
It's two. We got another Christmas episode now. We'll wish them.
My apologies.
We'll wish them Merry Christmas on that one. No, but Alex, hopefully in the new year, come back whenever you want.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, you're going to be one of those guests where you just when you got free time, knock on the door, and then we'll just do a podcast because we like you a lot. I mean, we like the other guests, but we have favorites. But yes, guys, as always, please like, comment, and subscribe.
But most of all, please enjoy that content.
Wave, guys.